information security, you know, don't treat it as an add-on. It is literally integrated into every single part of the business, whether you actually realize it or not.
Hey gang, welcome back to Future Proof. I'm Bill, I'm your host. Good show for you this week. If you're a CPA, here's a hard truth for you. You don't get to opt out of cybersecurity anymore. I know some of you think that this is a tech issue, that it's not your problem, and you're wrong. And we're gonna do a deep dive today into just why you're wrong. And we'll get to that here in just a moment. First, a reminder, this week's show made possible by our preferred providers. And we actually like to think of these folks as partners. These are the organizations, the relationships, the partnerships that allow us, the MACPA, to do a lot of the great stuff that we do for our profession, including this podcast. But these partners do way more than that, too. They are doing things that we believe can help you all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world and help is really the key word there. They truly do want to help. So please reach out to them, find out more about what they do and how they can help you. You'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org. Okay, so cybersecurity. Yeah, this is not just a tech issue, folks. It's not something you get to hand off to the tech people and be done with it. And it's definitely not something that only happens to big firms. If you have email, and let's be honest, right? You live in your inbox, you know you do. And if that's the case, man, you're already in the cybersecurity game. And here's the kicker. For all the hype about AI-powered super hackers and really sophisticated attacks, most breaches still start the same old-fashioned way, right? With a simple email and one very human moment of distraction, right? Click, done. It's that easy to do real damage. And that's exactly why I'm excited about today's conversation. I'm joined this week by Luke Kiley. Luke is Chief Information Security Officer at Smart Vault, and he's also Chief Security Officer at ComplyWise. You may have heard him talk about cybersecurity during an MACPA town hall meeting last year. He's someone who spends every single day in the trenches, right? Helping firms fight back against all this stuff. And Luke has this wonderfully practical take on the whole threat landscape. He says, yes, attacks are evolving. Yes, AI is changing the game, but the fundamentals, they really haven't changed much at all. In fact, Luke points to research showing that 19 out of 20 cyber attacks still originate from email and usually succeed just because we're busy and overloaded and just human. Right? Sound familiar? I mean, for CPAs, that risk gets amplified too. We've got intense busy seasons, hard deadlines, long hours. And when we're sprinting through tax season or audit crunch time, cybersecurity tends to just kind of slide down the priority list exactly when criminals know that we're most vulnerable. So in this episode, Luke cuts through the noise and focuses on what actually works, right? Getting to the basics and getting them right, building simple layers of protection across people, process, and technology, and not waiting for perfection before you act. We talk phishing here. We talk ransomware, compliance headaches, the FTC safeguards rule, outsourcing smartly when you don't have a big IT budget or a big IT team, and how even small firms can dramatically reduce their risk without blowing up the budget. And the bottom line to all this, cybersecurity isn't something you buy once and then check off the list. It's something that you do and that you live every day, right? And if trust is the foundation of what we do as CPAs, protecting client data is part of the job. So really glad you're here for this one, folks. Here is my conversation with Luke Kiley. Luke, thanks so much for joining me and for being so generous with your time. Once again, I appreciate you being here. Let's start with this. I mean, how would you describe like the current cybersecurity environment, the threat landscape as it exists for, you know, for this profession in particular? But let's start with that.
Genuinely a very interesting question, because when I look at it, if we take a step back and we were to look at all the marketing hype, you know, we are led to believe that we are seeing increasingly sophisticated attacks. Everything's driven by AI. The volume's increasing. We're falling behind. And I think the reality is aren't that simple. Simply put, if I were to say that the security practices that we were doing 20 or 30 years ago are still just as relevant today, that would suggest that we haven't actually evolved so much. Yes, we are finding different ways of leveraging AI. Yes, we are seeing more sophisticated attacks. But a report that I saw in Q1 of this year, 19 out of 20 cyber attacks all originate from email-based attack vectors, of which the human typically is the point at which it gets compromised. And it's not because they're doing anything wrong. It's just a simple reality. We are human at the end of the day. So, no, I disagree that it's getting harder to detect. I disagree that we're finding it more difficult. I just think we aren't getting the basics right. And there's too much information for firms to consume on what is the right thing to do. Analysis paralysis. There's just so much to consume. They pause and then they'll wait for the right help at the right time, and that might never arrive.
Yeah. And I'm kind of guessing like the right thing to do there, that involves both like at an organizational level and at an individual level as well. Just kind of keeping our guards up on both of those fronts.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think, you know, the idea of don't let perfection get in the way of progress. The simple mm-hmm. fact is you can't be 100% secure. So focus on getting the basics right. And you might even say, I'm going to aim for 60% secure, but get the basics 100% right. That for me is a really, really good starting point.
Yep. Well, I want to get to some of those basics here in just a second. I'm just kind of curious from your standpoint, what kind of unique challenges do maybe CPAs or accounting and finance professionals face when it comes to, you know, safeguarding their data, their clients' data? Anything specific to this profession that kind of stands out?
I think they're very much the seasonal nature of what you do is probably the biggest thing. If you find most other organizations, yes, they'll have peaks and troughs and ebb and flow throughout the year. But, you know, CPAs have got very distinct busy periods throughout the year. And that is when you will see a natural uptick in cyber-related events against CPAs. I saw a stat relating to last year, there was a 300% increase in cyber attacks measured against CPAs just because of the seasonality of what you do. Wow. I think that is actually quite unique insofar. But if you look at the month by month and the different seasons throughout the year, when it's summer, when it's winter, you have different types of crime that are likely to become more prominent. So if we look around February time, Valentine's Day, we'll have romance related fraud. We'll, you know, leading up to, you know, Cyber Monday and Black Friday and all those cyber related events, you'll see an increase in online fraud. You'll see the same kind of fraud, but nuanced towards Christmas and the like. And I think that's one of the challenges that your CPAs are going absolutely full throttle, trying to meet deadlines, dealing with a lot of detail, a lot of complexity, a lot of customer demands. And, you know, sometimes cybersecurity will drift off into the background.
Yep.
It's human nature. And that's why I'm such a massive advocate for outsourcing, because they can do things you probably can't do yourself 24/7, 365, or in the same capability.
Yeah. Or, you know, we just don't have the capacity. Like you said, during these very busy times of the year, it's we're so busy doing other stuff that, like you said, cybersecurity will sometimes get shoved to the back burner and it can't stay there, you know? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just think it's interesting on that point, actually, because I think cybersecurity, for all intents and purposes, does get treated as another thing to do, rather than being actually integrated into the business. Now, for what I do, I touch on literally every part of the business, and that could be human resources in terms of how we bring people on, what access they're given, what devices they're given, how I patch them, what type of screening do I do. I look at from the financial perspective about making sure that we've got whistleblowing policies in place, or we've got mechanisms to catch mandate fraud or fraud that are going to target the finance departments, or just general operations to find that balance between security and usability. There is a bit of a trade-off. And so information security You know, don't treat it as an add-on. It is literally integrated into every single part of the business, whether you actually realize it or not.
Yeah, and it's got to be. It reminds me of, I forget who it was that I was talking to back in the early days of social media. He was like, you know, I can't wait for the day when we stop talking about doing social media and we just start being more social. Right. In other words, we get to that point where it's just kind of integrated in everything we do. And I think the same point applies here with cybersecurity. It's not, 100%. It shouldn't be something that we look at as, you know, that we're doing separate from the business. It is part of the business.
Yeah. It's not something you have. It's something you do. Mm-hmm. And you've laid that. I mean, you've actually said those words without me having to tell you. That is something I say time and time again. Cybersecurity is not something you have. It's something you do.
Yep. Yep. Well, let's talk about some of those basics here for a couple of minutes. I mean, what are some of the most common threats that you're seeing with regards to this profession these days?
Look, overwhelmingly, email. It's you know, it's successful for a reason. It's one to many. You can automate significant aspects of that. You can put different types of payloads. Want to see a payload? You can have a malicious link that is designed to take it to a website and capture your credentials. You can have an attachment that has malware embedded in it. You could actually have it from a social engineering standpoint where it does nothing. You'll have an email that comes in. There's no payload attached to it. It is simply designed, do you respond? Are they actually sending an email to a valid email address? Is it actually live? So now they're actually getting that kind of intelligence to know, now that I know that email address is alive, they didn't respond, do I need to change my tact? They did respond, now I've got them on the hook. So social engineering is a big part of it. The ability to deliver, you know, malicious aspects into the business. So email has to be done right. And for those firms that are not using document management systems or other ERPs or any other ways of actually sharing documentation with customers, you really need to rethink that. Email will null and void your insurance claim. It will not hold up to scrutiny by the FTC or the IRS if you have a data breach. It will not save you from any civil litigation if a customer were to fine you or sue you if you were to have a security attack that was email-based and you didn't have the right protections. So for me, that is one of the biggest parts of the business to get right.
Interesting. Wow. And it just seems like we've been dealing with that specific threat for so long that it's almost like, I don't want to say that we feel secure in our ability to spot stuff like that. But they keep doing it because it works, I guess.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's it. And I think, yeah, AI, that's where it has genuinely improved its success, only because you can pump in a content. I actually generated a phishing campaign not that long ago, and I used it fully out of AI. I asked it to go away and actually do research against the actual entity. I asked it to research the website, go to social media and find the key players within the organization. I wanted to know specific products and features and messaging and tone and sentiment. And I used it completely just to build it. And I did that within about 15 minutes. I launched it. I targeted it against a specific department. Bang, bang, bang. And you can see it was just so easy.
Yeah.
I think email, it's a little bit like catching the common cold. People just like, you know, it's going to happen. I'll just deal with it when I come to it. But there are so many, like malware, there are strains and variations. If you look at cybersecurity, it's linked to human biology. When we talk about viruses and we talk about the heartbeat of an organization, you know, people just get sometimes a little blasé around email security.
Yeah. Yeah. So what should we be doing? Firms, finance teams, what kind of steps can they take to kind of protect the organizations, the clients in that type of way?
There's layers to it. People, process, and technology. So if we look at the people aspect by all means, give them training and education. If you can afford a training platform, if you want to use that mechanism, use training to actually educate them on what's actually happening. Have town hall meetings or stand-ups and tell them what's actually happening in the business. What's going on out in the threat landscape or the compliance landscape. But while you're there, talk about the process. in that if you have a phishing related scam, or if you don't see something that's quite right, have a process to deal with it through incident response. I mean, that somebody knows to click a button that reports the phishing, or that they know to escalate it to a line manager, or they know how to invoke an incident response plan or a business continuity plan. That's the process aspect. Then there's the technology, in that you'll need really technology that is protecting email, you know, being able to withstand and block and filter emails coming in, deal with emails once they've landed in your inbox, having security on your, I want to say, endpoint on your laptop, having security on any on-premise servers if you have them, having access controls to effectively prevent people from getting access into areas that they shouldn't have access to. It's like a Venn diagram. People, process, technology, your people and your business are at the core of that. So there has to be layers. I wouldn't say just depend on one. I'd have layers of it to make sure that if you miss one, then the others can supplement it or compensate for it.
Probably a pretty big overlap there in that Venn diagram as well. Each one of those is hugely important. I'm kind of curious with individuals, you know, how much of the responsibility kind of falls on an individual employee's shoulders to make sure that they that they know enough to keep themselves and the organization safe, especially, you know, in this environment where, still so many people are working remotely, maybe not within the internal protections of the organization, so to speak, using their own technology at home. I mean, what do we as individual employees need to be thinking about?
Look, I think there's two aspects which I'll cover. And I think if we look at all employees as a general rule, I think you've got to try and marry up the work life and personal life. Because if you can associate that, if you can carry these practices about what we're teaching you in your business life and your employment, you can carry that good practice into your personal life and vice versa. And that if people are attuned to looking for, you know, malicious emails and, well, I say dodgy emails in their own Gmail or the Hotmail or whatever format they're using, they can carry that practice back into the business. And I think there's got to be a big overlap, particularly with remote working. Look, I am overwhelmingly a carrot versus a stick person. I hold my hand up. I fall foul of phishing. I've done it. And you know, why would I criticize anybody else when I can be just as susceptible as anybody else? I've got a lot of access and a lot of power to be able to do things within my role. I'm naturally going to be a target. So simply put, just it's all about education. And you know, show the benefits of actually doing it and make it natural, not as a as an add-on. I talked about the cybersecurity culture last time. Ignore cybersecurity culture because it's another thing that you have to do. Make it a cybersecurity aware workforce. The other point is you raised is about individuals. There is one specific rule, which is the FTC safeguards rule, that talks about the qualified individual. Now, if you're a CPA firm and you're doing financial related matter and you are subject to the FTC safeguards rule, you are legally obliged to have a qualified individual run your security program. Doesn't matter who it is, but they just say you've got to have real experience. And that could be the firm owner, could be someone in finance, could be someone in operations, or you could outsource it to someone like myself and I run that for you. But that person needs to have more than just an awareness of what to do to protect employees or what technologies that they do. They need to risk assess every aspect of the firm's cybersecurity posture. And a lot of firms are actually overlooking that requirement. They go straight to, we need a WISP, we need a plan. Well, the qualified individuals is actually the first thing on that FTC safeguards rule that's asked for.
That's an interesting point. It was going to lead to one of my other questions, which is, you know, so many of our members they work for, you know, either very small organizations or are sole practitioners, you know, without big IT teams or budgets or a lot of resources to kind of throw at this issue. I mean, what can they do to kind of stay safe while you know, not necessarily breaking the bank, I guess, when you're dealing with the problem of manpower and capacity and resources.
I think that's, again, where outsourcing really does show its true value. Yes, cybersecurity can be expensive, but I honestly was looking at a packaging right at me right now. The actual cost of securing a device and getting 24/7 security monitoring and having some level of security posture assessment, it's less than your monthly coffee bill per month to protect that. And I think that you need to just draw some comparisons. Well, how much do I actually spend on coffee? You might think, well, I can get full endpoint protection that's monitored by a security team 24/7. And it's actually telling me where I need to fix the problems. And I think that puts it in reality. It costs nothing from education. You can go onto any number of government resources and the websites, download security packages and educate your team. You can download free VPN services. You can download free password management services. I'd be a little reluctant to download free anti-malware services personally. But look, simply put, it does not have to break the bank. It can be something as simple as $10 per device per month, and you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. And it's a buyer's market now.
Yeah, yeah, and when you weigh that against the potential losses involved in experiencing a breach of any significant size, probably pennies on the dollar. So
it is, and I think again, where cybersecurity incidents, you know, people get caught up in the how much you're actually losing revenue right there and then. It's the after effect, the aftershock that comes from it, such as loss of revenue through loss of customers, or you know, being sued because you've not seemingly done enough to protect customer data, that can carry just as much, if not more weight than the actual cyber attack itself.
Well, speaking of breaches, I mean, what are some of the first steps that firms, organizations ought to do if they do experience a breach? And it's not, you know, an uncommon experience to have. I mean, what should they do first?
It really depends on how far into the process you are. I think the first thing, and I say this from an emotional level, do not panic. Mm-hmm. I've seen from my law enforcement days, so many people and all these best laid plans go to pot because people just get caught up in the emotion. They can't consume information. They can't make rational decisions. I think as soon as you let panic set in, your ability to make an informed decision that is going to be the best for you and the business and your customers, it can be hurt very easily. So I think having an incident response plan, really simple in terms of if this happens, who do I call? And that could be, say, well, I need to speak to a cybersecurity firm. I need to speak to the authority, which could be the FTC or the IRS or the data privacy authority for the state you reside. It could be your insurance company. It could be, I think you just got to have literally a bulletproof list of that Rolodex. I need to contact these people. From a technical standpoint, if you're not entirely sure what you are dealing with, then reach out to a third party and get them to do that work for you. If it's ransomware, you know, I say this from a law enforcement perspective and someone who's actually dealt with ransomware, they tell you not to pay the ransom. As a law enforcement organization, because it fuels the economy. You've got to weigh up paying the ransom versus actually effectively killing your business by withstanding that ransom and actually being subject to, it's called double extortion. You either have your data encrypted, you can't access it, you pay the ransom. If you say, I'm not going to pay the ransom, then they take the data out and then they put it onto the web. They're going to extort you through ICO fines and through data privacy fines. Mm-hmm. It's called double extortion. If they can't get you through encryption, they'll do it through exfiltration. Again, try and cut the access off the device. Try and segregate everything, particularly your servers or your access in the cloud, that you know it's got access control so that you're not going to bleed access or have malware propagate from one device to the next onto other devices. So many permutations with this, but you know, that plan's very important.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. A lot of things to consider there. One of the things you brought up in our earlier conversation with our members was the issue of third party software vendors and what we ought to be doing in terms of vetting them to ensure that that they're secure as well. I mean, what kind of issues are involved there, and any advice that you might have in that area?
I think the biggest challenge at the moment, you've got sort of two aspects. You've got the major players who have been in the market for such a long time that they're very well established, but you know, sometimes they come with a premium cost. For me, you've got to make this, as a small firm owner, as simple as possible. And for me, I tend to look for security certifications that are independent validation that they have gone through the right checks and balances from a security and data privacy standpoint. SOC 2 is a great one. Whether it be type 1 or type 2, you know, it depends on your risk threshold. You need to see that report. If they say, yeah, we're SOC 2 aligned, but they do not produce a report, that is a massive red flag for me, because they say, yeah, we're aligned. Well, what does that actually mean?
Right.
Well, I can say that I'm aligned with HECVAT. Well, we've got nothing to do with HECVAT in education, but I can say I'm aligned to it. You need to see that, because for me, that tells me that they aren't doing the right thing. The second part of this, there are so many startups coming up right now. You can build code and infrastructure and products overnight, and that comes with some serious risk. 2 weeks ago, we were looking at validating a potential candidate to deliver a service for us, and I asked three questions that were not difficult to answer. They couldn't answer any in any level of competency, and it would have made me and the organization non-compliant with so many laws and regulations just by using them. Be very careful about startups. If they can't competently answer things around where's my data stored, what kind of security you've got in place, do you even have your own security program in place, and can you evidence that? If they don't give you any level of confidence, you trust your instincts, because like I've said it before and time again, accountants are very, I think, astute. They're very detail-oriented. Trust your gut. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. If you're not sure, get somebody else, a third party, to actually just ask the questions on your behalf. I will happily ask any third party the hard questions on your behalf. Not sure, can drop me a message. I'll do it for you. And I'll tell you, you know, no holds barred, you know, I think it's a good or a bad decision.
That natural kind of CPA skepticism will serve us well in that type of area, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You're no stranger to this, obviously, but the pace of technological change, I mean, it just keeps getting faster. What emerging technologies are you kind of watching at this point? Anything out there on the horizon that you think is kind of poised to present some pretty big risks for us down the road?
I think you can't avoid AI and what that is going to do, but there's so many variations about what that can do. AI that's integrated into your core, you know, big vendor products is much safer in a lot of ways than actually trying to do it yourself, because you've got to spend the time and the effort to try and build an AI agent or understand how you can use that level of automation. It does take some time, and it's not accurate a lot of the time. When you're first starting out, it comes with quite a lot of troubles to get it right. Quantum cryptography, it's not necessarily going to affect you directly. You would be a byproduct of that, but you know, we're trialing technologies now that have got the ability to use cryptography particles to secure memory on a device. Now, it is mind-bogglingly complex, and I do not profess to be an expert in it, but even I look at it and I think that is, you know, that is next level. So I think cryptography is, you know, quantum cryptography is going to be a game changer, a little bit like the blockchain, that is going to have some meaningful impact to us as a indirect threat to the firm.
Interesting.
I think when I look at threats, I don't necessarily look at the technology aspect. I look at the compliance aspect as well, because the rate of change on the compliance landscape is overtaking the technical threat, in my opinion. 690 different forms of AI legislation in the US alone were pushed through for approval. 690 AI, and that's just the US. Then you look at all the data privacy legislation that's going state by state in the US, and there's obviously a federal bill that's being poised, and then what European legislation is going to do to affect there is the threat landscape and there's the compliance landscape, and they're moving at different paces. So yes, absolutely look at what cyber criminals are doing, but also keep one eye on what's happening with the compliance landscape, because that's the one that really has teeth in it.
Compliance and you know, regulators and lawmakers and their ability to kind of keep up with this stuff, I think that they move at a much slower pace than the technology itself. Is there any hope that compliance will actually, by the time this new law or regulation comes out, impacting one area, the technology likely has advanced well beyond it, you know? I mean,
it is interesting. I can give you an example. So you have the California Consumer Privacy Act, which is data privacy led. There's also the California Invasion Against Privacy Act. That was back in the 70s and 80s, talking about wiretapping. We're talking about people intercepting phone calls. That now is relevant to you visiting a website. Wiretapping has been misinterpreted or reinterpreted as, you know, when you go onto a website and you track someone's activity, that can actually amount to a wiretapping related activity. So that's in a case where technology has evolved in that. I've got to be really careful when I say this, but I say this in the best possible way. If I look at the IRS and the guidance they're producing for accountants, I just feel it's behind the curve. It's a little bit one-dimensional. It's not really fit for purpose. They give guidance on your written information security plan, and a plan is nothing more than a document. It's words on a paper. I just don't think that is fit for purpose. There needs to be more governance that is driven. It's operational in nature. It's risk in nature that factors in the evolving aspects of technology. But again, legislators, are they really equipped to be guiding on technology? A lot of the time, I don't think they are. And I think technology is outpacing compliance. But when compliance does catch up, it tends to be very, very powerful. It has a huge impact.
Yep.
I've answered the question in a number of different ways there. Legislation is falling behind, but I think it's just because they aren't asking the right people the right questions.
And it doesn't change the bottom line there, which is, the compliance environment is one that we all need to be paying very close attention to, just so that, you know, we're in compliance with, you know, we're not only safeguarding our clients' data, but also protecting ourselves by being in compliance with the regulations that are out there. So
I think the safeguards rule is a really good starting point. Just use that as a starting point, as a template to work from, because if you can use that, it talks everything operationally and strategically to about who actually runs your security program, having a risk management framework. It talks about vulnerability scanning, endpoint protection, access control. It's got the foundation for a program. And that's exactly why I developed my WISP compliance pack around that and industry framework, so that you're actually ticking the boxes and exceeding state privacy law.
What's going on at Smart Vault that's new that our members might need to know about, and where can they get more information?
There are definitely some things moving within Smart Vault right now. And I must admit, AI is front and center of that. And we're not just talking about AI that can write an email for you. This is AI that is meaningfully, it saves time. It gives consistency. It really, I would say, is a game changer in terms of what it can actually do for you. And not just the here and now, but also what it's going to do for you for next year. So if I were to say right now, I use that AI, it's going to help you in 12 months' time do things that you weren't able to do before.
Yeah.
So, watch this space is what I would say.
Yeah, no doubt. Just to boil it all down, Luke, I mean, if you could give one piece of advice to firm leaders and other CPAs and accounting and finance pros out there about just building a long-term cybersecurity strategy, or just, like you said, embedding and weaving that culture of that mindset of security into everything we do. I mean, what would that one piece of advice be?
I haven't got one piece because there's so many, but I would say is embrace not knowing and embrace change. Mm-hmm. Are probably the two things. Just accept that you're never ever going to know everything, and you're never going to be able to control everything. You know, that's a mantra I follow because I can't know everything, and I have to keep learning every single day. So they're probably the two principles I would follow. But again, don't let perfection get in the way of progress. Get the basics right. Follow frameworks like the FTC safeguards rule, or through ComplyWise Online, they've got, pre-built packages, and leverage outsourcing as much as you can, because it will invariably probably be cheaper and more cost-efficient, cost-effective overall to actually help you grow your firm so you can get on with doing your day job.
Yeah, great advice. Well, Luke, thanks again for your time, for your insights. I really appreciate you being here. This is obviously an important topic, one that's not going away, and maybe we'll get back online with you at some point down the road and revisit what's new and what's next. So, but in the meantime, thanks again for being here. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Great stuff there from Luke Kiley. Luke is Chief Information Security Officer at Smart Vault and Chief Security Officer at ComplyWise. You can learn more by visiting either complywise.online or smartvault.com. And be sure, folks, to check out our show notes this week. There's just a ton of reading and resources curated by Luke Kiley himself, including a ransomware prevention guide. He's got 10 steps that firms can take to improve their cybersecurity. And there's just a whole lot more there as well. You'll find all of that again in our show notes. That's at macpa.org/news. And finally, don't forget this week's show is made possible by our preferred providers, our partners in this profession. They're doing things that we believe can help you all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And you will find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website, macpa.org. And that is all I've got for you, gang. Thanks for being here. Have a great week. We will talk to you again soon. Take care.